You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard to another edition of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. And they are all in the studio today, everybody, from Prout Financial Design. Mr. Dennis Prout, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Well, we're kind of scrambling here with no local news. Here we go. Well, it's great to be here. Thank you, Ron.
Yes. And you are bookended today by?
Joined by Heidi Cartwright. Heidi Cartwright.
That's right.
Good. All right, CP and Managing Director at Prout Financial. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning.
See, we're all clearing up the...
good morning.
And we're busy talking about how much snow are we going to get with Colleen and all that sort of thing. And, boy, I'm guessing, Colleen, you're probably getting a lot of phone calls. You know, are you serious? We're supposed to get, what, 140 inches in the next 2 days or something? Is it 14? I forget 14. Which it was.
Yeah. It was more than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would
be getting. Yeah, I think people didn't necessarily expect to have a morning commute like we did today.
Yeah. Yes.
No,
you know, while
not
it was still
all.
Dark, it was a little bit icy and slippery, and the visibility was terrible.
Yeah.
So that's going to keep on, just so everybody knows. This is going to keep snowing.
Snowing and snowing.
On and off till Sunday. Through Sunday.
On and off through May.
Yeah,
exactly. That's true.
And look at this. We may have snow Thanksgiving for all the ski areas around here. That's what I was thinking.
I heard
it cools off.
Yeah,
oh,
Nubs, Nubs Knob may be opening this weekend.
Wow.
Crazy.
Boy, pushing the envelope, and why not? And two, joining us as well, Deanne Jennings, our Director of Operations. Welcome, Deanne.
Thank you, Dennis. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here. We have a ton to talk about. Obviously, now just think about this for a moment. We are about 6 weeks away from the end of the year, end of 22, six weeks out. So you want to think about any tax planning or numbers, things that you need to take care of by end of year. For instance, for those with required minimum distributions, if you have a beneficiary IRA, in most every case, if you're over the age of 72, if you have a regular IRA, then you need to draw that money out, your RMD, which if you're age 72 is about 3.7% of the balance or so. Well, don't we have to take it all out? No, 3.7%. So quickly, $100,000 IRA balance, you're going to need to take about $3,700 out. It, to be exact, Heidi just gave me the cheat sheet. There it is.
Heidi is a woman of numbers.
She is indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I like numbers.
Yes.
It's actually 3.65% for those who actually are wondering. By the time you're 80, it's 4.95%. By the time you're 90, 8.2%. By the time you're 100, let's see.
Clear that baby out.
It's 15.63%. 15%. Almost 16% you have to take out by the time you're 100.
Yeah, but by the time you're 120, it's 50%. So.
Yeah, there you go. So that is a joint life expectancy, not to be confused with some of the businesses locally. A joint life expectancy simply means it's you and a supposed spouse. So you're basing it on two, even though you may be single. So you can still use that joint life expectancy. So key is get those RMDs done in the next 2 weeks or so because the processing times are longer. Just as those who are trying to buy snow tires right now are finding out, it's the wait is long because there is a shortage of staff. the staffing shortage. It still goes. It still goes on.
I noticed you were looking at me, Dennis, when you said that.
Somebody may need snow tires.
Maybe. Yeah. Oh, maybe. Yeah. We're not naming any names in the studio this morning. But.
Snow tire deal. Yeah, we were talking about snow tires before the show. That's why.
Over there, yes. I got good snow tires last year, but they melted on the way home.
All right, moving right along.
He's riding on the rims. Yeah, those snow tires will do it every time. I'm just trying to picture that. That's like, you know, Popeye or something, Ron.
Yep.
Okay, that wasn't the one that wasn't the sounder we were looking for.
What the heck are you guys talking about in there?
I don't know.
New Retirement Radio.
There we go.
What would Ed Slott think?
No kidding. Then the other part of that, too, is thinking about the other points related
to the next
the big
year.
Cost of living adjustments for 23. Heidi mentioned those briefly last week, I think it was, in terms of how much more you can save in 2023. It is significant. So think about this in terms of 401ks, not so much in IRAs, but IRAs did go up, and then the expansion of the tax brackets. So in essence, in many different ways, you may well have a tax cut in 2023 if you're a saver and or if your income is right on the bridge of a different tax bracket. They're expanding the tax brackets. The tax brackets have increased in terms of what you can still pay, for instance, at 12%. At the 12% bracket, the income numbers went up. So you're going to have more space within the 12% bracket, within the 22% bracket, and so on. As you increase in the brackets, obviously that difference will be even more marked, okay? More significant in that case. So it's important to take a look at what do I need to think about for year end, because it is coming up quickly. Next, I'm going to be talking briefly here about Roth conversions. Heidi's also going to be talking about Social Security issues related to divorce and the specifics related to that in previous spouses, whether or not you can collect. And then, two, next week, Bob Simpson's going to be on the rebroadcast. He'll be rebroadcasting for us. Thank you, Bob. On Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, next week. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Yes. And then Deanne's got some great stats for us as well. So today, paying Roth conversion money with IRAs. Roth conversion money with IRAs. Now, this is kind of edgy for the Ed Slott Group. This is the first article I've seen of its kind. And why is this big? It's simply talking about the reality of, for those who don't have the cash saved aside to pay the tax on a Roth conversion, if you're over age 59 and a half, that's the demarcation point, you may want to consider paying the tax out of your IRA. If you don't have money saved aside, why is that? Because the tax brackets, they are so low, and they're due to go up in 2025 automatically. So the current brackets only stay in force through the end of 24, and then they automatically increase. And what did we just mention? The expansion of those brackets in 23 is going to make the tax brackets, in essence, even lower. The amount of tax generally lower for you in 23 than it was in 22.
So if you have a regular Roth, or if you have a regular IRA,
correct.
And you say, I want to convert that to a Roth because there's no taxes taken out when I start collecting my money. Conversion.
Yes.
If you do that, you have to pay tax on it.
Correct.
And you're saying, instead of pulling it out of your savings or saying you don't have it, take the money out of your Roth
to pay the tax.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Wow. And you can take that money out over what age?
Over age 59 and a half.
Okay.
So what's interesting about that is you still have that. There's still some other limitations, but generally, because these tax rates are so low. This article, by the way, was written in November's newsletter for Ed Slott by an excellent CPA with Ed Slott, within the Ed Slott Group, a master lead advisor. His name is Marty James. He is a CPA. within the Ed Slott organization. And we see him virtually every time that we're there. And it's interesting how much in depth this article went. And we were talking with a client, clients yesterday about this very article, because he and his wife were doing this very thing. They're converting money to a Roth from their IRAs and paying the tax with the IRAs, with the IRA dollars. In essence, perhaps 20 to 22% is what they're going to be paying out of the IRA to convert that money to the Roth.
Wow.
But because they anticipate their income to only increase in here quite dramatically in the next 2 to 3 years, because they'll both be age 72, and because the brackets are going to come up. So they have to take required minimum distribution from their IRAs at age 72, number one. Number two, given that significant increase in income, they're going to be most likely in higher brackets because those brackets are going to change in 2025. Mm. Okay? So you really want to think about, what does the future hold, as usual, in these Roth conversions? And if you're right in that sweet spot, if you will, between the age of 59 and a half and 72, that is traditionally the best time to do these Roth conversions, especially if you're not having to take income out of your IRA as well. So for those with IRAs, and the other concern or consideration with this is, do you have growth mutual funds that have a great long-term track record, but that you could easily convert to the Roth IRA? That can make another difference. So what do you hold in that regular IRA account? What is your time frame to hold the Roth IRA? Can you pay the tax with the IRA conversion dollars without having to pay a penalty? All these can work together. Do you anticipate an inheritance here in the next year or so, to where your income may come up, and or you may wind up having some of these monies already set aside that you weren't anticipating? All these things together can really make a huge difference in your ability to do more Roth conversions and or take advantage of more Roth conversions.
So what you're saying, Dennis, is the reason that 59 and a half age is so important is because if you're using the money in the IRA to pay the tax on the conversion, if you're under 59 and a half, that's a distribution, so you'd be subject to a 10% penalty for that amount.
Correct.
That was used.
That's where the 59 and a half, thank you.
And that's why that's important, right?
That's why it's important, because of the 10% penalty on the amounts that you use to pay the tax if you're under the age of 59 and a half. So that's something to keep in mind. Well, what if I'm 58? Well, you have to wait. Wait until you're 59 and a half, unless you have money saved outside of the IRA to pay the tax. Then it makes even more sense to consider something like this.
You know what would be a good law for someone to introduce in Washington, to say anybody who has or does convert to a Roth IRA cannot ever pay tax on that, regardless of what Congress does down the road. In other words, grandfather them in. Right.
Well, yeah, that's what current law says. That Roth conversion amount is not taxable. And I think you bring up an important.
But they could reverse that. I mean, they could, right? Congress could
make a law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They could. That's correct. So the biggest concern about that is, what if Congress changes their minds?
Yeah. Yeah.
They could always do that. But think about that in these terms. Could they also change the rules on IRAs and 401ks? They could do that. Now, if they were to change the rules on the Roth, they would be cutting off their nose to spite their face, because the amount of revenue that they get in terms of tax would go down dramatically, because people would no longer do conversions. So those conversions represent a significant amount of revenue for the federal gov. Given that reality, probably unlikely.
Dennis, I like what you're saying about, talking about the tax brackets. They're low now, and to take advantage of that, because you said in 2025, those brackets are going to change. And
that's
so
right.
Taxes are not fun, but if we can take advantage in any way, that's awesome.
They're historically low right now.
Yeah.
If you go back to the 70s, tax brackets, I think we're all the way up to 70%.
Wow.
Now, right now, the max is about 45%.
Mm-hmm.
So while the income certainly come up since mm-hmm. then as well, the tax brackets themselves, in terms of a percentage of that income, has come down dramatically.
Yeah.
So you bet. Now, some other things to think about are you don't have to do these conversions all in 1 year. You can spread them out over several years. Age and health for married couples. A large difference in ages or poor health on the part of one spouse can be the deciding factor in choosing to use IRA money for the conversion tax.
Sorry about that.
It's quite all right.
Just wanted to see
you were just making sure we
little
were
little drama.
Awake, right?
Yeah,
wow.
Dramatic effect.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, by the way, I do want you to play a special song for us, if you would, Ron.
Yes.
Greensleeves by Pentatonix on one of the breaks, because we went into the music part here, okay? Greensleeves, Pentatonix.
Job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then next, for married couples, as we were mentioning, a large difference in age or poor health on the part of one spouse can be the deciding factor in choosing to use IRA money for the conversion tax. That's because of the so-called widow's, or we'll say widower's, penalty. An increased tax bill, even with a reduced income, because a surviving spouse eventually will be filing as a single person or taxpayer at steeper tax rates. So, you know, are we knocking on death's door? It's not a pleasant conversation, but it's something to think about. If you're still filing jointly, and you anticipate filing solely here in the near future, that can make another difference in your ability and or in the savings you realize if you convert some more money currently to a Roth. Do a Roth conversion, given that one spouse has passed away and you're still filing jointly, or you would anticipate the same. Okay?
We do have a question from Denny about IRAs.
Great.
Denny in Traverse City on New Retirement Radio. Good morning, Denny.
Good morning, guys. I don't know if I missed this because I just came into the conversation, but a conversion from an IRA to a Roth, is that with a 401k or is it just strictly an IRA?
You can also do a conversion within a 401k if they have a Roth option within your 401k. Okay, so you want to ask the human resources people or even the administrator of your 401k, do we have a Roth option in the 401k, and can I convert to a Roth within? You certainly can. The interesting thing is you can't change your mind once you do. You can't with a regular IRA either, but remember, of course, you'll still owe the tax, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, Denny.
Yeah, and you cannot pay the tax with your 401k money. You'll have to pay the tax outside because of the tax imposed on that conversion to the Roth within the 401. So you don't have the same ability to pay it out of your regular 401k money. You can't do that. Or where you can with the IRA.
Yeah.
Clear as mud?
Clear.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. To all of our listeners out there, thank you. Thank you for listening. We love doing this show, and we're looking forward to the holiday season here, too. We'll probably do a Christmas special of some type. I don't know whether I'll pre-record it. We've done that in the past. I'm just throwing this out.
22nd is a Thursday. December 22nd is a Thursday.
I guess that'll be the Christmas show then.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been thinking of a couple stories I might read as well from All Creatures Great and Small. There's one in there that's just really good, so in my mind anyway. So I think many listeners will find the same. So, yes. Heidi, hit us with the Social Security notes regarding divorcees, if you would, too.
Yeah, so this comes to us that we get a Social Security newsletter as well from the Ed Slack group. And I thought it was really interesting in the mailbag this month. And so I thought I'd bring this out. Some unique circumstance, maybe not attributable to everyone, but it's just amazing the rules and the complexity that you have out there when you're trying to figure out what benefit do you get and what are you entitled to. So this person wrote in and said, my former spouse and I were married and divorced from each other twice. I guess you could say I should have learned from the first time, but I didn't. The first marriage lasted 9 years, and the second one lasted only a year and a half.
So a fast learner, at least.
Yeah, the second time. Right. We owned a business together, and he hardly paid, she hardly got any salary out of that, out of the joint venture. So she knows that his benefit will be much higher because of how they pay their taxes and stuff like that. So she wants to know, can I add the two painful periods of our marriage together to get to that 10 years required to be able to draw on a former spouse's record?
I'm going to say no.
Not right there, Ron. The 10 years of marriage does not necessarily have to be continuous.
Consecutive, okay.
To still make eligibility possible for benefits under your ex-spouse record. A divorced spouse must meet two requirements. One, be fully divorced, and two, have been married for a period of at least 10 years immediately before the date of the divorce becomes final. So here is the, like, complexity to this, right? We said that yes is the answer, but it's only yes if the second requirement is met. If the divorce is final on or after the 10th anniversary of the marriage, this requirement can still be met even if the marriage is interrupted by a prior divorce, provided remarriage to the same spouse occurred no later than the calendar year following the calendar year of the first divorce.
Wow.
So you have to get remarried quite quickly in order to be able to add those two periods of time to meet that 10-year requirement. And here I'm like, wow, I was even surprised that the Social Security even had a rule that's detailed
on that. They even thought of it. You know, that's interesting.
So just something that people should know, if you are in these situations, just know to ask the question or to bring it up, you know, to see if you can qualify for a different benefit.
It can make a difference. And obviously, if the benefit is higher as a result, then your homework that you've done and or even the questions that you've asked can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. When you're going to collect your Social Security benefits. And my question to Heidi before we were, you know, going through the information, well, doesn't Social Security automatically know this? And Heidi said,
no, I mean, no. They're not keeping track of divorces and remarriage and the date that you got remarried and that. You have to bring your information to the meetings. You need to have those decrees. You have to know the dates. So you want to put that stuff together before you go to that meeting so it doesn't draw out the process or cause a delay in finally figuring out what benefit you're entitled to.
Yeah.
So
when were we married again and how long was that? You know, you want to check that out. Have it written down.
Right. So sure. So if you're married for the second time, you want to make sure you stay married long enough that second time to get to the 10 years. So.
If yeah.
As long as you got remarried really quick.
I wonder how many people that impacts. How many people out there have been married to the same person two different times for at least 10 years?
It just seems so crazy, like that. It's that truth is stranger than fiction type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it caught my eye. But there was another letter in the mailbag, and it said this letter said, I know that it is possible for a currently married to receive a step up in her retirement benefit when her spouse files, if her own retirement benefit is smaller. Is that also possible with an ex-spouse who has been married for at least 10 years? So the answer to this person is yes, it is possible, but of course we have some qualifiers. If the lower earning divorced spouse is not an independently entitled spouse, that means that the higher earning former spouse has not yet started to collect benefits. And so both things have to be true. The divorce has not occurred at least 2 years prior to the claim, or the higher earning spouse was not yet age 62 at the time of the lower earning former spouse initial claim for benefits. So the ex-spouse could have the benefit recalculated to include the higher ex-spouse benefit once the earliest of these two things occurs. 2 years have passed since the divorce became final and the former spouse turned age 62, or when the former spouse files. So I'm throwing all this at you guys.
You are.
No one's going to remember all these little nuances. But again, these are just two examples of your unique story. It's important for you to have that information, to lay it out, to think through these things so that you can get the best benefit, the highest benefit that you're able to get, because that's going to make a difference for you in retirement.
Absolutely it does. And because everyone's living so long, an adjunct to that is, in the last 2 days, I have had 381 either conversations on the phone or in the office with 81 approximately year-old individuals who are all actively involved in their careers. And by actively, I mean they're working basically full-time, whether it's on a farm, real estate, manufacturing. It's amazing. And they are... They're still loving their careers. I was thinking 10 years ago, I would not have had that conversation. That would not have existed. So people are working much longer now. And what I'm saying is that stream of income can make a difference because people are living that much longer and they're active longer and in whatever it is they're doing. My gosh. They are stretching the imagination to what previously we thought was, you know, just not in the realm of possibilities. No. It's amazing.
When Social Security started, though, what was like the average?
Great point. The average life expectancy. They started, you had to be 65 to collect benefits. And guess what? Almost nobody lived until age 65.
Yeah.
The average life expectancy may have been 67 to 69 at that point. Well, now it's 83, 85 or so. And, of course, as you age, that life expectancy increases. So I'm telling you, those slow Cadillacs are only going to grow in enormity here in the next few years. They're just going to be more, you know, a part and parcel of our driving scene.
A couple of text questions or comments.
Yes.
From the text line, if I am 36... and have lost $30,000 this year in my 401k, which is looks like it's went from $160,000 to $130,000. Do I need to do anything differently going forward to recoup the loss, or should it swing back as the market changes? Well, that's a judgment call, but any feedback on that?
Yeah, my feedback is always review on a yearly basis, at least, where the allocations are in your accounts. Your time frame, and what do you have available? Many overlook the options that they have within their 401ks. Why not sharpen the pencil as you go along? Everybody knows this. The small differences that you make, whether you're sharpening a pencil or sharpening an axe or sharpening a chainsaw, as Ron loves to do, we all get that. But some time spent looking at, okay, what are my options? Should I put more in the Roth option within my 401k? Should I reallocate some of my new contributions to where, in essence, perhaps that portion is more aggressive and the portion that's in the lump sum is not quite as aggressive? Am I comfortable enough with that reality? Because if the value was did he say it had been at 160 and now at 130?
Right, and he's 36 years old.
Yeah, that's a decline of about 18 3/4, almost 19%. So that's about where the S&P is this year. And if he's quoting 930, 930 was the bottom of the market so far this year. So the S&P 500 is still down about 17% to date, if you will, year to date. The Dow's down less, but it's interesting. If you continue adding to those same accounts that have been down, you are then participating in dollar cost averaging as long as you continue to invest through the cycle. So we have come out of every economic decline before, and most likely will happen again. Next is Deanne Jennings with the stats.
Absolutely. I have some bear stats for you this morning. After suffering 10 separate bear markets between 1950 and 2021, the S&P 500 recovered and eventually achieved a new all-time closing high each time. The average length of time it took to retrace its steps from a bear market low to a new closing high was 25 and a half months. The quickest recovery was just 3 months in 1982, while the longest recovery took 70 months between 1974 and 1980, and that's by the numbers. A bear market is defined as a stock market decline of at least 20%. In the 75-plus calendar years from 1946 through June 13, 2022, the stock market has had 12 declines of at least 20%, or one every 6.33 years on average. That's interesting, a bear market.
It is,
every 6 years.
And I'm thinking, going all the way back to '09, March of '09, when it hit its low, I think the market was at about 6,500 or so as measured by the Dow. When you think about that, we hadn't had any bear market decline. I think it was until April of 20, February, April of 20 or so. So really quite a long period of time without a decline. And now we've had the second one in is about two, three years or so.
Absolutely. Since 1950, the average decline of a bear market has taken place over a 15-month period and has resulted in an average index tumble of 34%. So in that 15-month period, Dennis, where do you think we are in the bear market right now?
Well, in terms of time, it's about we're about 9-10 months into it, because the market hit its high just about at the end of 21, beginning of 22. So far, the low has been set at 9:30, September 30th. Basically the low for the S&P and the Dow.
Okay. So if we're average
sometime
in 2023.
Maybe. Yeah, if we were looking at averages then, it would
be
about...
Yeah, we're just dealing with averages.
March of 23, rather, before we begin to pull out of it. What's interesting, too, is the market is always taking a look at the future or trying to gain or deign the future. Given that reality, what is it saying? Well, we think that the Fed may blink when it comes to raising rates quite so aggressively. And we also think that inflation is going to be tamping down somewhat. The rate of rise is going to decline. So that's basically what's happening right now. We'll see whether the Fed agrees and or whether they continue raising rates to the degree that they have.
Yeah, that's good. And both those stats were by the numbers as well. Inflation, supply chain disruptions, and labor shortages continue to limit the ability of many small businesses to meet the demand for their products and services. 33% of U.S. small business owners said inflation was their single most important problem in October. 31% of owners reported supply chain disruptions have had a significant impact on their business. 46% of small business owners reported job openings that were hard to fill. And 90% of those hiring are trying to hire reported few or no qualified applicants. And that source is National Federation of Independent Business Survey.
That incredible,
90%.
What a challenge to be running a business these days.
Yes.
Small businesses.
Especially small businesses.
What was that number again, 90%?
90% of those hiring are trying to hire reported few or no qualified applicants.
Yeah,
so you get all these applications in and they don't even qualify for their small business position.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it wonder.
Everybody's having problems.
Yeah.
If you're having problems hiring people, everybody.
It seems to be just common.
Retail, restaurants, manufacturing.
Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Everybody's having these issues in terms of getting people, qualified people, to help them out. You bet. Was there a question or
question from the text line?
Sure.
If I convert a portion of my 401k to a Roth 401k, do I have to wait 5 years before I can touch it without paying a 10% penalty? Got that?
Well, you're talking about different things. It's going to depend on when you decide to retire. Obviously, if you're even let go, what's interesting about the 401k universe, if you are let go from that company after age 55, it's not 59 and a half. So that's a bit of a wrinkle in the whole regulations related to those penalties that might be assessed. So that's one way to get around it. If you leave the money in the 401k and let's say you decide to retire at age 56, any monies that you draw out of that 401k are not subject to the 10% penalty. So it depends on what area or arena you're talking about taking a withdrawal. Are you taking a loan or are you taking a one-time distribution, which you can sometimes from some 401k plans, or are you just leaving the company, in which case you have much better liquidity options.
And all most right? of those five-year rules with Roth accounts are Roth IRAs, not yeah. Roth 401ks.
Right, so they don't apply to the Roth 401k in many cases. And I listed a few where it wouldn't apply. So yet each case has to be looked at separately.
Just another example of how complex things can be, and it's important to see your financial advisor.
Yes. Talk about it. Many of these questions, now, depending on your 401k provider, it's a great question to ask them and or the consultant that works already with a 401k. Bring those questions to them. This is something you want to continue to work with. All of these questions relate to your own ability to draw an income. That's what these accounts are, in essence, supposed to be for.
I think one of the big things, too, in the employer plan world, too, is they're unique to that company.
Yes.
So you can't ask a friend who works at another company if they're for what their 401k offers may be different from mm-hmm. yours, because the employer themselves are allowed to say yes or no to many, many different items on that list. So you always have to go back to your plan administrator. You can't just say, well, this guy did it, I can do it. So. Yeah,
such a good point.
Yes, and don't discount, if you will, if you're overly negative about your current 401k plan, don't discount what's being offered to you there. There may be hidden gems, hidden diamonds, if you will, because of what you have available and or the match that could possibly be made for you by your employer. I tell clients, listen, if you're getting 100% match from a 401k contribution, and let's say you're putting in 5%, I'm sorry, I can't match that rate of return. You're getting a 100% guaranteed return on the 5% that you're putting in of your compensation. So let's just back it up a minute. If your compensation for the year is $50,000, just to keep it simple, you put in 5% of that, it's $2,500, or let's call it $200 a month. You're putting in, when your employer matches that at 100%, you're going to have 100% return on your funds that year. Pretty tough to beat. So make certain first that you're getting the full match from your employer. That is free money you must take advantage of. You must. Okay.
Is there, from an employer point of view, tax advantages, or what's the cost to the employer to give somebody a $5,000 raise or to put $5,000 in their IRA or 401k? Is what difference does it make to the employer, if any?
It doesn't make any difference, okay, in essence, because they can deduct it either way.
Okay.
But for the employee, you know, obviously in the long term, especially for those who are saving, right, those who are putting money in there, that's where it's going to make the most difference. So when the employer is offering that, they have to offer it across the board. It doesn't mean that every employee is going to take them up on it.
Yeah.
So generally, an across-the-board increase in wage is going to cost the employer more because it is across the board.
Yeah. And another thing an employer might think of, Ron, is if they're trying to encourage that employee to stay, funds that they put in on the employee's behalf are subject to vesting. And that means the employee, the longer they stay, the more of that they own if they leave. So that is one reason why employers offer that match, is to encourage employees to stay for a period of time and not, you know, leave.
Fly the coop.
Right. So that could come into that decision process.
Correct.
Is what I'm just saying.
What's interesting about that is the employer contribution is vested usually over a period of 6 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. The employee contributions, the amounts that you might put in, Ron, are always 100% vested from day one.
Right.
You always get to leave with those. But the employer contributions may take some time for you to get 100%.
Right.
I have a random question.
Go for it.
What's the Russell 2000 stock index?
It's another index. Mr. Russell put these stocks together. I have no idea.
It's
a Russell 2000. Is another index put together that I often don't follow. So
it's mostly
can't really,
small cap.
Small
we
cap
look at
stocks.
It as an indicator of small
okay.
cap. Yeah.
All right. I have a flyer from 1888 from a bookseller that goes on about you owe it to yourself to educate yourself. I stated that your value to your employer would increase and that your employer then could pay you more.
So, I love that. How much time do we have? Let's hit on this text here. We got 5 minutes. All right. This is incredible. What it means is I'm going to read it again. I have a flyer from 1888 from a bookseller that goes on about you owing it to yourself, if you will, to educate yourself. Ben Franklin said it very well. The man, or we can say woman, who pours their purse into their head makes the very best investment. You're going to tend to be more valuable to your employer over time if you continue to educate yourself. What if any of us are going to be seen as being more valuable, whether it's in the open marketplace or by our employer, if we stay status quo? So that's where the personal responsibility comes in. And that's where some of the hardest work must be done. So the last of that says, it's stated that your value to your employer would increase and that your employer then could or would pay you more. And what I tell my employees is if we don't pay you more, you'll get more from somewhere else. It is a free country after all. And if you continue to improve your own serve, if you will, your own service to that company, the difference between what you're being paid and what you're worth will become such a yawning amount that it'll allow you, in essence, to go and look. Okay, here's what I've done. Here's my resume. Here's what I've been able to do with my time. You know, here's where I've increased my knowledge. You'll be paid more over time.
I think with young people, high school students especially, you're kind of the mantra is go to college and you'll earn more money. But the specifics of that should be you're entering a marketplace and you have to bring skills or value either as an entrepreneur, impact the marketplace, or as an employee. And maybe get them thinking about, like, what's my edge or how can I improve my value instead of just, like, go to college and expect to get a good job.
Yeah. None of us are exempt from needing to continue to learn about our craft, about our field, about what we're doing. It is a must. And to me, it's not just the increased value. It's the increased challenge and then the increased gratification, if you will, about having that increased knowledge. It's more fun. It's like taking a look at a pianist who is at Carnegie Hall. The years and years of practice that went into that, none of us see that. We just see the incredible, incredible performance that occurs. But the tears and the time and all the rest, that all kind of goes in the background for the person performing as well, because it is a natural high to be able to perform at that level. And all of us have that right and that ability to do something like that with our lives.
That's like that old joke. A guy's walking down a busy Manhattan street carrying a violin case, and he stops. Somebody goes, hey, could you tell me how I can get to Carnegie Hall? And he says, practice, practice, practice.
Yes, yes. Much more.
Uh-huh,
honey. You bet. So it's amazing. One other, how much time do we have here?
You're good. You're good.
I've been watching more recently on YouTube, Arnold Schwarzenegger's goal-setting series. There's a whole thing on him working out. And he's got five components of achievement there that are tried and true. Check it out. It's inspirational. Arnold Schwarzenegger on YouTube.
Wow.
Goal-setting. Go for it, okay?
I'll check that out. Thanks for the tip.
Hey, you're welcome.
Except you have to know how to spell Schwarzenegger to look it up.
You have to know how to say it, too, right?
Yeah, right.
Jeez.
Prout Financial Design. Now, the new building is on 8th Street at Garfield. How do you enter? On Garfield or 8th? Or in the parking lot?
The parking lot.
How do you find our front door?
That's a good question, Ron. I'm glad you asked that.
Yeah, clients are still trying to figure that one out. It's on the east side. It's a double doors right there
double
on the
doors
east side of the building.
East side, so that would be the Garfield side.
It would be...
No, it would be the parking lot side.
Parking lot side.
Okay. Yeah. Between right by the bakery.
Mm-hmm. And us. And that's...
Exactly.
And the double doors.
Yep.
All right. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, D.N. Jennings, Prout Financial Design for everything you need. Thank you all.
Thank you,
Ron. Thanks, Ron.
Love it.